Blog Talk Radio.
Nothing, but not me. Just that.
He's having trouble, it seems.
Yep.
Nothing, but not me.
All right, try one more time. Caller from the 614 area code, hello.
Yes, hello, it's me. What happened? I heard, like, nothing.
I don't know what's been happening. I've been talking. You haven't been hearing?
No. Must be one of those weird things happening in the universe. I couldn't hear you. I could not hear anything. Hold on.
Well, that's very strange. I guess a lot of strange things do happen in the universe, but what can you do? Anyway, this sounds like Nicole from Columbus,
yes,
Ohio.
It is Nicole. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Okay.
Cool. So let's hear your poem.
Okay. All right. I'll go ahead and whip out something that I've revised and I've kind of been sitting on for a while. I've only read it a couple times out in public. I work at a Catholic seminary up on Route 23 here in Columbus, Ohio, and I happened to be up at the front desk of the front reception desk one morning, and I was in a really bad mood, And I happened to sit down because I was actually covering for the receptionist while she went to take a break. And I happened to see a paper with the Pope's picture on it, and there was some headline. And I guess the mood I was in, it just kind of really just made me feel even worse. It just kind of upset me even more. And I kind of already had an attitude that day to begin with. So I'm like, row, 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 you know. So, but the good thing is a poem came out of this. So I will present for you now my poem, Nails. Whose version is the right version of truth? And will your version demand a conversion of me into something that I will not recognize except for my muffled screams and truncated dreams? Those artifacts are pinned down TNT, packed in tight with body-slammed chili peppers that hold in their rage as a caught exhale, rage that runs red livers, rivers of liquid scream down my back till he tracks, telling the tale of my ache. And all of this is vibrating below a thin veneer of ice, lined with butterfly lace and wax paper, perfectly positioned to protect and obscure the ugly. Now, tell me, how does a 10-year-old fight? Does she pound boulders into the back of her hand until her skin caves in, swallows the rock, and vomits blood onto her knuckles? Does she then curl her fingers into fetal monsters and let the whole bloody mess of open, jagged skin crust over and freeze into a fist made of burnt diamonds that can knock down concrete and window giants in a single blow? Tell me, how does an 11-year-old extricate herself from the 9-inch nail bed springs that are buried in her back and soaked in her own urine because somebody forgot to tell her that she was not 6 years old anymore, that boogeymen no longer exist except in the confines of nightmares and closets, and that your home should not be a closet, and that there should never be a boogeyman in your own house offering you soft pillow arms and acid rage randomly by turns? And how does she step outside the boundary of outcome inside this insane game of chance, which is dictated by the spin of an unseen schizophrenic wheel of misfortune? Tell me, how does that 6-year-old understand that humans are not trees, and that you should never mistake your spinal cord for a root system, never bury your heart and back into soil? How does she know that you only leave behind neurons when you are ripped away from that soil and then some parts of you go numb? And one morning, at precisely 4:01 a.m., right before her 33rd birthday, that girl will wake up and discover a forgotten arm, a once-dead eye, a clicking shoulder that she had written off as useless a long time ago. And it will hurt beyond trinket and plastic cliche, beyond carefully formed metaphor, beyond even the ability to puncture her fingertips and siphon out the blood into inkwells to write sugar, electrolyte, ketones, and grief onto the page. Now, tell me, when that happens, will your dogma catch her pain in its arms? Ritual take mop and bucket to her floors and erase where she's bled 10,000 times before and then offer to do it again on those nights when the only thing she knows how to do is bleed? And will your orthodoxy show her the face of God, press the divine upon her tongue, and tell her to swallow, and help her to believe in something beyond stars, beyond nails, beyond crucifixes, pageantry, and calendars, because she will need precisely this? She has hung on crosses, stolen the children of rainforests, and desecrated their faces with her own blood in the name of salvation since 1982. So tell me, what will you do to stop her from driving another nail into her hands?
Well, you know, life would be a lot easier if human beings were trees. I mean,
perhaps,
think about it. Think about it, Nicole. We'd just be kind of sucking up water and participating in photosynthesis. We wouldn't have to worry about whether microphones are working, if anyone was hearing us, if the beginning of our blog talk shows were functional, that kind of thing. It's kind of sounds ideal.
Yeah, that's true.
Well done, Nicole. Good start to our show. Thanks very much for sharing that piece.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you.
Anything going on in Columbus you want to let us know about?
Actually, most of the open mics are going along their usual schedule. Most are weekly. The poetry form, however, which is only happening during the school year, it runs from October till about May. That will start up, I believe, the first Monday in October, and Columbus poet Vernell Bristow will be their first feature. If anyone wants additional information, they can just go to puddinghouse.com and then click on the calendar link, which is on the left-hand side of the page, and that gives not only the poetry form schedule, but that gives the schedule for pretty much all of the open mics in Columbus. I also keep up an events page, and mine's at ravenswingpoetry.com/events. Mine is not quite as expansive as Pudding House's, but mostly I try to keep I try to put blurbs up about the three or four major open mics in town. So between those two, I think you should get pretty much a good amount of information on what goes on in Columbus on a monthly basis.
It sounds like it. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. Thanks for being a regular here on the show, and thanks for opening up for us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
No problem. That's Nicole Nicholson calling from Columbus, Ohio, giving us a great new piece, a good way to open the show. So it sounds like I'm looking in the chat room that that no one heard me when I opened up the show. A couple of people said they didn't hear anything. Might have been some kind of issue with the microphone on my phone here. I gather you can hear me now. I feel like I should begin the entire show again. Perhaps I should start life all over at this point, but maybe we'll just start with the show. So if you didn't hear the Welcome to Poetry Superhighway Live, allow me to tell you, welcome to Poetry Superhighway Live. It's the September 2009 edition of our open reading. That first couple minutes of silence, that was in memory of, I don't know, let's say something terrible that happened that I can't remember right now. Just we like to memorialize things every now and then. So I also want to mention, because I gather you didn't hear this as well, that it is the last 2 weeks that you can enter the Poetry Superhighway contest. The deadline is 2 weeks from last night, September 19th. That's the date that you have to postmark your entry fees. It's $1 per poem entry. You can enter as many poems as you like. If you win the contest, if you're in one of the top three scoring positions, you will win a percentage of the entry fees taken in. You'll get, if you're first place, you get 50% of the money taken in. If you come in second place, you get 30%. And if you come in third place, you get 20%. So all of the money taken in goes not to line my pockets, but to goes straight back to the winners of the contest. But say, what happens if you don't win the contest? Say you come in somewhere between 4th and 104th. Well, that's okay, too, because we have a huge roster of prizes donated by a lot of different sponsors from all over the world who have put up books, magazines, services, things which are of specific interest to poets and writers. And this is the 12th year of the contest. Every single year, we have been able to give every single person who entered a prize just for entering. So that's very cool. You're a winner just for entering the contest. So give it a try. There's a couple ways to find out how to enter. Number one, if you're on the Poetry Superhighway website, just click on 2009 contest, and the guidelines will show up right there. Or you can send an email to guidelines@poetrysuperhighway.com, and they will be emailed to you. Make sure you follow them. It's a couple-step process. You have to fill out an entry form, and then the entry form gives you some specific instructions on how to enter your poems. You have to send them to a certain email address in a certain format. We don't take attachments, blah, 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 blah. The important thing being, if you don't read them and you don't follow them, then your entry won't be accepted. And as we get down to the wire here the last couple of weeks, there isn't a lot of time for me to get back to you and say, hey, you didn't do this right. Can you do it right so that way we can enter you? They're kind of set up to just to make the contest run smoothly, and I know sometimes people are disappointed if they don't get in because they didn't follow a guideline or so. So check that out. It's a really cool thing, and we want you to participate. All right, moving right along. Again, the number to participate in today's open reading is area code 646-716-7362, or if you'd like, you can click on the Click to Talk button right there on the Poetry Superhighway Live page at Blog Talk Radio. Of course, usually that doesn't work and I end up hanging up on you, but you can give it a try. That's okay. Moving right along now, our next caller is from the 908 area code. Hello.
Hi, Eric. This is Dave from Newark, New Jersey, the Lush Rolling Hills. let me launch right into my story. And you know, there's always a story behind every poem. Very briefly, in 1974, when I was a mere pup of 16, I was in a work-study program sent by my high school. I went to an alternative high school here in Newark, and they sent me to a camp near Peekskill, New York, to work as a counselor in training, or CIT. I befriended a fellow CIT by the name of Curtis Cost, who was an interesting paradox, in that he was a kind of a cross between Denzel Washington and Steve Urkel. And he's a magnificent specimen of male physiognomy, but he was nerdy as all get out. And he could write. Boy, could he write. He was tremendously talented. And he showed me one of his short stories, and the short story was about a band leader who had died on that very day. And this band leader was very reclusive, no friends, no family, nobody really knew him or got close to him. The only being that was close to him was his cat, and he left everything to his cat. And so he leaves everything to his cat, and the cat was being interviewed by this talking head announcer. You know, the absurdity of this in the story made it very suitable for adapting it to verse, which I did years later. Now, in Curtis's story, the cat is simply found awash in tears. You know, he cries. But in the poem, however, I've decided to rub out the little beastie. I whack the cat. In other words, the cat dies at the end. Well, here it is. Let me read it.
How can you give that away before even reading the poem? I mean, you know, that's like, oh, by the way, you're going to go see, some great mystery movie, and let me tell you how it ends before you go see it. I mean,
go ahead.
Well, go ahead, Dave.
Okay, here it goes. The music fades, the lights draw low, the swelling din that must subside, with joyous music finally stopped. This is the day that the master died. The studio lights fill every nook, except for the chair where the master sat. The last light finally reveals the truth. In that seat there now sits a cat. Not just any cat, but the dearest friend who the master told his secrets to. This story a query special guest, poised and ready for his interview. The announcer steps to the front in haste, impeccably groomed and nattily dressed. Apparently combed with buttered toast, he leers with contempt at his special guest. No friends nor family of any kind, so that his work might carry on. No successor to this calling able to create such joy with his baton. This self-centered fuzzball seated here, who alone had known the master's care, this useless postule always with him, at his side always, everywhere. Nothing to give and nothing to lose, nothing to gain, what a terrible waste. The master's secrets in this creature's keeping, gone forever, such a bitter taste. He feels not the slightest tinge of sadness, no grief shows on his whiskered face. The master's gift in this cat's keeping, gone forever, what a huge disgrace. As old cement head ends his show, not the slightest noise does the kitty make. The lights were dimmed, the silence fell, as the master's cat seems wide awake. The banging of chairs, the clanging of props, the master's theme would long subside. When they arrived at the master's seat, they found that the cat, indeed, had died. Drenched with grief, still wet with tears, this lifeless fuzzball had finally spoken. In life the creature could ill express that the dam had burst, his heart had broken. From the torture of inconsolable loss that the wretched human heart can't see, to the still wet teardrops on the master's seat, the master's cat was finally free. Those fading lights, the far-off strains, the din that would at last subside, but the small, sick heart concealed from view, this day the master's cat has died. The dying creature could not describe the music he'd heard and the places he'd been, but his furry corpse will indeed attest to the fathomless grief churning deep within that cannot be heard nor understood, for the priceless love dwells deep inside. The bond between these kindred souls lives on even after both have died.
Wow, David, it's, you know, I was just at the farmer's market this morning, and where there's all kinds of signs that say, you know, organic this and, you know, organic watermelons, organic apples. And when I was leaving the market at the exit, there were two young women with a box that said, free organic kitten. And sure enough, in this little box was this tiny 6-week-old, extraordinarily cute kitten.
Yes.
You can understand I'm a little sensitive to cat death right now.
Yes. Yeah.
David, I appreciate you calling in and sharing that that piece and giving us the background for it. What camp is it that you went to?
Camp Madison Felicia. It was run by the Humanist Society. They're located on East. Somewhere on the east side by Central Park East, and they ran that camp. It was for underprivileged kids, and it was really a great experience. It was just a terrific experience.
They say that youth going to summer camp is one of the most positively influential things that can be done for a kid.
Well, it was beneficial on both ends. It was beneficial on their end, and it was beneficial on my end too. Because even though I was a counselor, I was still only 16 years old, and I had never gone to camp before. So it was just as new and fresh of an experience for me as it was for them, for the campers themselves.
I can completely relate, having been basically in the same situation that you're in terms of having first gone to camp as an older person. David, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your work, and have a lovely rest of your day in the rolling hills of Newark.
Okay, well, we'll talk again, Rick. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right, take it easy. Bye. That was David calling from Newark, New Jersey, giving us a story about a cat. So call in 646-716-7362. Moving right along to a caller from the 863 area code. Hello.
Hello, Rick. I'm Noreen from Lake Wells, Florida.
Hi, Noreen. How are you?
Okay, I'm doing fine. I was the one who called last month, but the phone went dead. I was your first caller last month. So we got us a new phone now.
I'm glad we solved that mystery.
Yep. Okay.
So do you have a phone for us?
Yes. I have one called Nature's Silent Cry. Okay. The old oak trees softly swayed their branches as if to say, what are you doing to us in our forest, our home? Why are you destroying us with your carelessness? Before you know it, we, the trees, will vanish slowly till we all are gone. Take care of us now, then we'll take care of you. Heed to our plea, we cry. The grass and the flowers are gently blowing with the wind as if to say, why are you dumping your trash on us? Why are you throwing your cigarette butts out of your car window and setting us on fire? We, the grass, used to be beautiful and clean to sit on and to romp around on. We, the flowers, used to be a beautiful sight to see, but now we're trampled on. Please stop littering on us, we beg of you. Let us be beautiful again. Heed to our plea, we cry. The lakes are rippling gently, as if to say, what have you done to us? We used to be so clear and so clean that you could see our bottom. No more now, since you polluted us with your chemicals and your trash. Please stop polluting us before our aquatic life is completely dead. Heed to our plea, we cry. That's the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, Noreen, what a lovely environmental message for this Sunday. I'm particularly sensitive to the cigarettes going out the car window. What with all the fires here in Southern California last couple weeks or so. So thank you for calling in, and thank you for sharing that piece with us.
Okay. Can I announce my website?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, you can go to my website at freewebs.com/Noreen N. Jenkins, and you can order my book from there, too.
Great, freewebs.com/Noreen Jenkins.
Noreen Ann Jenkins.
Noreen Ann.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Cool. Well, I hope some people go, and then we'll talk to you again.
Okay, thank you. Okay, you have
thank
a nice
you.
Day.
Okay. You too, Noreen. That was Noreen Jenkins calling from Lake Wells, Florida, solving the great mystery of who was that caller last month that wasn't there when I said, hello, you're on the air. Now we know. I'm relieved. I hope all of you are. It's probably why there's so many callers on the air and people tuned in right now. You just you needed closure to that. So it's done. All right, ladies and gentlemen, moving right along, our next caller is from the 760 area code. Hello.
Hi, Rick. It's Brandon Sema from Valley Center.
Hey, Brandon. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are things up there for you?
Not bad. Inside the house, the air conditioning's on. Was at the farmer's market earlier today, enjoying a long weekend, trying not to breathe the air outside with all the ash, but things are okay.
Yeah, you know, I've been hearing from people not just in L.A., but also up in the Yosemite area about the fires. It's terrible what a lot of people in the state are going through right now.
No doubt. Homes lost, people displaced, a great deal of the wilderness changed significantly. It's tough.
You know, I think when we spoke last, I was just about getting ready to go up to the Tuolumne Poetry Festival.
Yes.
And that I was hearing from another poet, James Downs, that his car broke down just after that, and they had to have it towed to be fixed to the other side of the Tioga Pass, and he's been unable to get back over to get his car back because of the fires. And just a lot of questions in people's minds about how to protect homes and communities from fires, why we have to go through this every year.
Well, you know, it's because we built our community here. I mean, fires are kind of a natural part of what happens in different places. I suppose, though, in some cases they're caused by human beings, but it's just part of the natural process of what happens. It's like asking, well, why do we have to go through earthquakes or hurricanes? Well, you know, this is what happens on the planet, and we build in certain places, and that's the way it is.
Well, I guess I'm wondering, because it seems like the one up there in Yosemite, that was thoroughly avoidable. I know that I've been in Yosemite in November in the snow when they were doing controlled burns, and it's one of the things that keeps a lot of the forest safe, but I just can't understand why they thought that it was appropriate to do a controlled burn in August. That just doesn't make any sense. Fire scientists know better. So somehow whoever was making the arguments for this time of the year, that's something that I hope will be looked into. I just can't see that there has to be some mistake that was made somewhere. That one I don't understand. But in any case, I do have a poem, a fire poem. We went through fires here in 2003 and 2007. I think one shut the San Diego County down for 11 days, and one shut the county down for 9 days. And it's become something that we're unfortunately learning to live with. And as you say, a lot of it has to do with from where we build, but probably some other things too. So I'm going to go ahead and read that if that's all right.
Absolutely.
It's called Fire Mind. October firestorm rolls west over the rim of Eden Creek Canyon. Smoke from hundreds of homes, barns, photos of lives of 17 neighbors, royals in incense of white sage. Sacred to tribal people on two reservations now ablaze, their outlawed spring burns resurrected brutally in autumn. Recognizing the ghost of smoke releases me to accept losing everything, so that when our house emerges after fire, only planks on the patio burning, I resist calling it blessing. That night, hot spots burn around canyon, the only lights there until neighbors rebuild. Power lines burned like fuses, exploding suburbs in brush. And above spot fires, stars calling back thousands of others, dark insisting. The second day after fire, I walked the rim, first time in 20 years, consoling neighbors I've never met until they sift ashes over concrete foundations. I trespass freely to the east, catch 5 goats, 2 pigs, a cat with burnt paws. I shoot 2 horses without hooves, their lungs singed, the blood they breathe the only moisture within miles. I shoot into another mind that has become mine. The fire, the rifle, in my hand, the bullet. I follow a trajectory heartless as flames over so many. Next week at a funeral, people flow through my arms. I survive to hold them. Open my cage of ribs. Their sobs become my heartbeat, their tears my blood. My warmth from pressure of motion, the same heat Santa Ana's rays crossing the Mojave. The town weeps itself dry while I wonder, where are my tears of survival? Each March, I burn brush, the flame at the match tip, the shape of an orange tear. Neighbors watch, every spring a warning.
Well, you never fail to impress, Brandon. That was a great piece. Good imagery. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on, Rick. And I just want to give a plug for this Wednesday night at the Fall Book Writers. I'm going to be reading at 103 South Main Street in Fallbrook. They start off with dinner at 5:30 at Café des Artistes, and then we read. So if you're in Fallbrook, Rick, please come join us. And if you're not, boy, I hope sometime you can be.
Well, I'll take that as an invitation and try to make it down there at some point. I don't think I'll be able to be there this Wednesday, but you never know who's listening, who is in the area. So glad you got to mention that on the air, and good luck at the reading.
Yeah, and you know what? They should have you come down for dinner. What's your latest book, Rick?
It's a re-release of I Am My Own Orange County, though I guess the latest of original material is called A Man With No Teeth Serves Us Breakfast, which is a poem which is a collection I wrote in London.
I think that would be perfect for a dinner reading. I'm gonna say, hey, we've got to get Rick Lupert past Orange County. We've gotta see if he can get in touch with his own San Diego County.
That has been my outer limit, Orange County.
We just have to change that. Where there's a whole other county down here, and we're feeling deprived of Rick Lupert.
Okay. Well, that's nice of you to say. I'll send some DNA down. Perhaps you can grow one of your own.
Fantastic.
Thanks for calling, and we'll talk with you again.
Happy day.
You too. That was Brandon Samon calling from Valley Center, California, somewhere in the happy medium between San Diego and northern California, Orange County. Try to move through the calls quickly because there's a bunch of you on the air and I want to try to get to everyone. I've got four callers right now. I think we'll have no problem getting to you all. But just in case, there's more time. The number is 646-716-3311. 7362, and we are going to go right now to a caller from the 917 area code. Hi.
Is that me?
Hey, that's you.
Hey. Hi, it's Iamato. How are you?
Iamato, hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I actually have a phone to call you from. Isn't that amazing?
That is, yes. I recall our unsuccessful attempts to hear you when
yeah.
you were calling London, and now you are not in London, where apparently they don't have phones. And now you are in a place phoneful.
I am. I was like, oh, how Rick's doing the show. How am I going to do it? And I'm like, you can just call him this time. It's exciting.
Crazy. The technology that's available. I'm very excited that you, under the auspices of your Down Home program, will be presenting Jay Lee Auld. Is it Auld? Is that how you pronounce it?
All day.
This Tuesday at the Cobalt in Canoga Park, where I host a weekly open reading, I just put his broadside together. I make a post for all of the featured readers, which we make available at the reading. And the poem that he sent was just stellar. I just loved it.
Like,
and
was it
I'm really
searing?
Excited to hear
very, yeah. He's a searing kind of writer to me. A lot of his poems are just so sharp, but beautiful
yeah.
too. Yeah. Oh, I'm really excited. I'm very excited to see the broadside. I'm really excited just to see him because it's been a couple of years at least since I've seen him read, I think, at least two summers ago. And it's been a while since he's been in L.A., so he's actually really excited as well. So hopefully it'll be a really good night.
Cool. Well, anyone in Southern California should make it out to this. Beth is presenting a poet. The Down Home series, that's a show that you used to do monthly, right?
Yeah, it was a monthly series that we did at Cafe Bolivar in Santa Monica, and it was poetry and music, and limited open mic as well, so we'd have a couple of poetry features and a music feature, and I discontinued it to travel a little bit, and I'm thinking about how I want to reincarnate it in the future, but maybe just sort of not necessarily stationary, not necessarily geographically linked. So I was excited when you asked me to do a presentation at the Cobalt, and also, you know, tremendously excited for the reader because they get a broadside, which is fantastic.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's going to be a good night. If anyone wants any more information, you can visit the Cobalt Poets website, which is poetrysuperhighway.com/cobalt, and there you can see the schedule of who is reading in the coming weeks and months, and you can download PDFs of all of the posters, the broadsides that we published for all of the previous readers. We've, in fact, just had our 200th broadside celebration a few weeks ago. Jay Lee will be, I think, the 204th broadside. So,
wow.
Cool. So, do you have a poem for us?
I have a short poem if you would like one.
I would.
Okay, this is a new poem. I've been writing some poems sort of mildly in the Sufi tradition. So this is one of those. It's fairly new.
Oh, I'm sorry, in the what tradition did you say?
Sufi, in the mystic poet tradition.
Oh, I see, Sufi, okay.
Yeah, I know I don't think our connection's so good, but hopefully you can hear me.
I can.
Okay, here goes. Everything is going to be all right. Look, see, God is draping you in garlands. Dripping with dew, they are redolent, fragrance intoxicating. Stop asking the universe for what you want all the time. Asking, asking, asking. Sometimes just sit. Sit and let it happen. This is the lesson of meditation. Give the universe a chance to create its change. Stop nagging, nagging. Do you like to be nagged like that? Patience is more than a virtue, Hafiz whispered in my ear. It is the way things get done.
Well, a poem that begins with everything is going to be all right is a great change from what we've had so far, in which basically the entire world is burning down and cats are dying. So I'm so pleased.
Cats are dying.
I'm so pleased, Beth. Cool. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Well, you're welcome. Yeah, I know. It seems apocalyptic over here, usually.
It is. You were in London, and we didn't really get the chance to talk with you that much about that, but were you just traveling there, or did, I mean, any particular journey you were on in that place?
Oh, that's like a good question. I mean, I think I was on a particular journey, and I'm not sure I figured out what that particular journey was particularly yet, but I was traveling, and I was doing some reading and listening and watching and writing and all of that. A little bit of everything. Looking for a new perspective, maybe.
Well, maybe it'll take a while before you figure out if you found it or not, but it's great that you have the opportunity to do that. I've only been to one poetry spot in London. It was the Poetry Cafe in Covent Garden. Did you get there?
I had gone there a few years ago when I was there on a trip, and I had met a bunch of poets there, actually, who I then later did some shows with. And I did go back there a couple of times on this past trip. I also spent a lot of time with different music venues, because there's a lot of very strong singer-songwriter community there. I spent some time in that. I was sort of the poet there.
Nice.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
Love London. It's such a fun place to be and eat and walk around, and I mean,
it is.
Know?
It's really, I mean, I think that's what I sort of wanted to, is just sort of to be able to step outside and just be somewhere. LA is so car oriented, and that always seems hard for me. I'm more of a pedestrian.
Well, be careful. It's not safe out there for pedestrians.
I know. So, yeah.
Well, Beth, I'm really looking forward to seeing you on Tuesday, and thanks for calling in today.
Thank you, and I will see you Tuesday night.
Sounds good. That was E. Amato calling from here in Southern California. She will be presenting the poet Jay Lee Allday at the Cobalt Cafe, the weekly Tuesday night poetry reading that I host here in the San Fernando Valley, Canoga Park. Starts at 9 o'clock. It's free. You just have to show up, and you can watch, you can listen, you can bring poetry to read in the open reading. There's a 7-minute time limit. And again, you can check out more info on that at the website, which is poetrysuperhighway.com/cobalt. Hello, caller from the 310 area code.
Hello.
Hi.
Rick, can you hear me?
I can.
It's Marie Lecrevain. How are you?
Hey, Marie. I'm doing great, thank you.
Oh, good to hear.
We moved up from Southern California to Southern California.
Yeah, all the way around. I love that. This best listening, I really liked your poem. That was very cool. I just thought I'd call in. I had some time this afternoon. Didn't realize you had the show, and I'm like, oh, cool, yay. So can I read a poem? Is that okay?
clearly, my marketing committee is not doing its job, if you weren't aware. But, yes.
Well, now I found your, I guess I'm on an old email list of yours, or my older email is on it, because I was cleaning out an old email box of mine, and then I saw the announcement, and then I found it on Facebook, and I'm like, oh, cool, all right. Anyway, now I have a poem for my new book, Antebellum Messiah, and it's a bus poem, of course, because I like Beth, and more pedestrian or mass transit oriented. This is about what you find when you're watching outside the windows of a bus. It's called Bare Naked. So it's bare naked, Easter egg-colored coif beauties frolic in front of the Page Museum on a cool Sunday afternoon. Make one fail to notice the putrid smell rising off the tar pits nearby. The photographer searching for the best angle through a camera lens while his assistant keeps a watchful eye on the street for the manifestation of law enforcement. The Google-eyed passengers through the windows of the number 20 Metro bus as it rolls by. The enterprising middle-aged security guard as he whips out his cell phone to record 10 seconds of video for later that night where, in the privacy of his dingy bachelor pad, he will replay in time with his rhythmic ejaculations and make one fail to notice me composing the lines of this poem in my head while I smile quietly.
Very nice. This is from your new book, tells the Antebellum Messiah, is that right?
Yeah, it's my big fat collection of poetry from the last 6 years. And it's available on Amazon.
Is that how but you normally not, describe it, your big fat poetry collection?
My big fat poetry collection, yep.
That's nice. Well, I hope it's not that hard to carry around with all that
poetry. No, it only weighs, I think with packaging from Amazon, it weighs 1 pound, 14 ounces. Anyway,
cool.
It sounds like you're busy, Rick, but thank you so much. I'm glad you're doing this. I'll have to keep listening.
No problem. Do you want to give a quick plug for your website?
Oh, yeah. If anyone's interested, I run an online magazine. It's inspired by Rick, actually. It's called poeticdiversity.org. We're the Lit-Zine of Los Angeles, and we're taking submissions till November 1st. Check it out on the web, poeticdiversity.org. Thanks, Rick.
No problem, Murray. Thanks for calling in. Great. Thanks for being a first-time caller. And please call back in anytime. We do the show every month, and we'd love to hear more work from you.
Oh, thanks. I'm liking what I'm hearing. Have a great one, Rick.
You too. That was Marie calling from here in Southern California. She's the force behind the Poetic Diversity website, and she has a new book, Antebellum Messiah, which you can check out at Amazon.com. Marie LeCrevin. All righty, we've got a couple more callers to go. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. We might be able to get a third caller, so go ahead and give us a try. If you got something you want to read, the number is 646-716-7362. And good afternoon to Don. Hi, Don.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Good. Begin with a short poem. Yes?
Remind us of where you're calling from, Don.
Oh, 707, which is north of San Francisco.
Is there do you live in a community that has a name?
Yes, it's called Sonoma.
Sonoma.
Yes.
Cool. Well, it's great to hear your voice again. You're one of the rare, usually in my switchboard here, I see area codes, but I guess you're using the click to talk feature, and I'm able to actually see your name. It must feel good to be identified by your name and not by a number.
Considering my jail days, yes.
A story for another time, perhaps. So you mentioned you have...
Only if you're pacifistic.
I tend to be.
Then we share a cell together, okay?
Sounds good. I hope the food is good. So let's hear your poem.
This is on the presence, P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S, of books. And it begins with a short explanation. For Courtney Blash, I gave her 41 books for her 41st birthday. 41, while not a vintage year, can be a time of change at which what is being done can be rethought and a more satisfying way of making a living can be installed in place of the old way. The poem. Keep the books when you are done, or give the books away as gifts to friends, as charity to institutions like prisons and asylums. Keep the books when you are done, or give the book away to agents of governance as if they were evidence. Keep the books when you are done, or give the books away to religion or to spirituality as either penance or amends. Goethe wrote in Faust that you are what you are. I echo, you do what you do, but in truth, you are what you read. I have given you the liquor of books in the highest of proof. Now, before I disappear, share a glass of print with me.
Well, that's lovely, Don. The liquor of books is an extraordinarily a phrase that you've got there. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Go ahead.
I'd like to give a little note of anyone who is in the area that the Sonoma County Book Festival is held on the 19th of September, Saturday, at the Court Plaza in the city of Santa Rosa. Begins early at 10 and ends at 5. It's a romp if you walk, jump, ski, or otherwise are mobile through book sellers, stalls, organizations, and any peculiarity that has to do with books, authors, poets, and the like. I will be appearing, but I'm not going to tell you when. Hopefully that won't turn you off. You'll come instead.
Well, you know, if you told them when, then they could theoretically avoid that particular time slot, you know. Whereas if you don't tell them when, they might not come at all. Just because it's a risk.
Okay. I see the logic of your negative explanation, and so I will negatively say, do not go to the reading rostrum between 1 and 2 or between 4 and 5, because I will be there for 7 minutes of both hours. Of course, you can read for those 7 minutes. That's nice.
That's not a bad compromise, I think. So, Don, if I were there, I would probably stay in the room and listen to your read. That's just me. But I have a high tolerance for such things. I host an open mic and have for many years, and with a 7-minute time limit. So I'm used to chunks of people or people in 7-minute chunks. So I think I'd be okay.
Okay.
Don, I appreciate you calling in. I hope the Sonoma Poetry or Book Festival, is that what it is? Sonoma Book Festival?
Sonoma County Book Festival.
Right. I hope it's a great success. I participated in a book festival in Santa Monica a couple months ago. It was fun. There were a lot of people reading. There were a lot of people selling their books, and networking makes it sound dirty almost, but it was just great to be with a lot of other like-minded people. It was a good time. So good luck with it.
Helps to overbridge the solitariness of writing. Yeah, but I would extend an invitation to Google Sonoma County Book Festival and get the page that has great information on it. Thank you much, Rick.
Thank you, Don. Thanks for calling in. That was Don calling from Sonoma, California, a repeat caller, someone who has read many times on our show. And good to have you back, and he'll be reading at the Sonoma Book Festival coming up. Check that out on Google for more information. We've got one more caller. Let's see. Hello, caller from the 908 area.
Hi. How are you?
Hello. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. What's your name?
My name is Helen Tinsley, and I'm a first-time caller here.
Well, great to have you.
Thank you, Rick.
Philadelphia.
I've been following you on the web, and I said, well, you know what? Let me give it a shot.
And here you are. I guess this could.
And here I am.
This will determine whether it was a worthwhile effort for you.
Okay.
I
am a writer, and I'm an artist, so I like to create a visual image to go along with a literary poem. And so the poem that I want to share is on bottle trees, and it's an African-American tradition to house the spirits of your ancestors in a bottle and hang them on trees. So sometimes you see it still in the South, in Alabama and Mississippi, where people, you'll see trees that are have no leaves, and every leaf has, every branch has an upturned bottle on it, and it represents housing the spirit of an ancestor. And it was an African tradition, and it's practiced by other cultural groups, by Latinos, by whites, and et cetera, today. You know, it's a synergy of cultural practices that have merged. But it is an African tradition, and it came from the West African culture. And so may I share the poem?
Absolutely. Let's hear it.
Okay. It's called Bottle Trees. The elderly gentleman greeted her with weary eyes on his tired face. Dressed in his Sunday finest, gray pinstripe suit, white shirt starched stiff, fancy tie, black wingtip shoes, hair slicked back, he was one specimen of a man. Light, bright, damn near white, as they used to say back in the day. Looking at his granddaughter, fixing his traditional after-church coffee and cake, he said, "Darling, Pop-Pop is tired today. Them haints rode my back all night last night." Sipping his coffee, it sloshed over the rim as Parkinson's took a hold of his body. "Darling, them haints will try to get you." "What are haints, Pop-Pop?" "Haints from generations past. Troubled spirits needing to be put to rest. They visited your grandmama, her mama's people too. Them haints are linked to bones in the depths of the Atlantic Ocean. Spirits running wild. You know the knife, darling, can change their energy if you cut the air right. Then you can use the power to help you. You got to collect that energy. Capture that spirit in the blue bottles. Hang them on the trees. Them the spirit guides, the protection. My Pop-Pop, he done crossed over now. But I still see the blue bottles swinging on southern trees, and I smile. My soul knows it is good. Them bottles, they got the spirit in them. Those spirits connected to fertile lands across foreign shores, where centuries ago talking drums sounded out the names of stolen Africans, and today djembes beat out the rhythm of celebration because the people continue, and the colored bottles shine. The wind blows, and the spirit still protects. Bottle Trees.
Helen, that was great. I think you did a good thing by calling in.
Thank you. Thank you. Can I share one more?
We don't have time for another poem, but
okay.
Is there anything, do you participate in readings in the Philly area? You got something?
I've recently relocated to Philly, and I have performed at the Philadelphia Magic Gardens. And which is a wonderful mosaic garden on South Street. And I performed in a few other places. But I do have a website. It's www.htinsley.com. www.htinsley.com. And on it, I have a book called Spirit Rising, Poetic Reflections, and it's available. And thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Please call in again. Congratulations.
Okay.
On your first-time caller.
Thank you.
My wife and I head there twice a year for Thanksgiving and Passover. So I know South Street.
I've moved here for the art. I was living in Jersey, and I worked at the Department of Ed in Trenton. It was so boring where I was living, and I said, the art is so touchable. I'm from right near New York City. And I said, the art is so touchable and plentiful in Philly. So I haven't regretted it at all. But on my website, I have a collage that goes along with that poem, Bottle Trees, which is interesting to even just view. Okay, thank you, Rick. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's htinsley.com. You should check out Helen's art along with her poems, htinsley.com, and check out that stuff. Well, we're at the tail end of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in. For all the California callers, Columbus, Ohio, New Jersey, Lake Wells, Florida, and Philly, California. I wish. That would really save me a lot in airfare every year. But and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Apologize for that couple of minutes of dead air. If you do listen to the show again, you can use that to meditate and or whatever, a moment of silence for whatever you'd like. Our next show is Sunday, October 4th. It's not going to be an open reading. We'll be announcing the winners of the currently running Poetry Superhighway Poetry Contest. If you happen to be one of the winners, you'll be able to call in and read your poem, or if you're in the top 10 spots, send an email to guidelines@poetrysuperhighway.com to get more info on entering it, or click on 2009 contest from the main PSH menu to learn all about it. Thanks again for tuning in, everyone. Have a lovely rest of your day. Bye.